Welcome to Top Shelf at the Merrick Library with your host, Carol Ann Tack. Welcome to Top Shelf at Merrick Library. I am your host, Carol Ann Tack, and I thank you all for joining me. We are back from summer vacation, and listeners, you must start your engines for September 20th, because that's when today's book, The Old Place, a fabulous debut by the amazing Bobby Finger, hit shelves. And it is taking the book list world by storm. It has appeared on so many different lists. The Washington Post top 10 books for September, Nylon Magazine, Lambda's literary most anticipated LGBTQIA pick, Kirkus, Lit Hub, and most recently in Book Page, where reviewer Alice Carey calls The Old Place an exquisite debut novel. All of this is 100% true. I absolutely loved this book. Listeners, it is book club gold. So having said all of that, Bobby, in case you haven't realized, I am so grateful and I thank you for joining me and the listeners of Merrick Library's Top Shelf podcast. I am thrilled that you're here.
I'm thrilled to be here. And with an introduction like that, I might not be able to leave. I'm staying here.
You can, and we'll clip that for you. You can make it a ringtone if you like.
I'll send it to everyone in my family. I'll be like, look, here you go.
In case you're wondering, in case you're a little cross with me, This is who I am. And I do want to let listeners know about you. Bobby Finger is a journalist. He's a podcaster. He's a pop culture critic. He is best known as the co-creator and host of the Who Weekly podcast alongside friend and fellow writer Lindsay Weber. He was a regular contributing writer to the Jezebel website. And while hosting his podcast, he is a contributor to Vanity Fair, The New York Times, Vulture, Vice, you name it. And somewhere in that mix, he has gifted all of us readers with today's book, his marvelous debut, The Old Place. So, Bobby, welcome again. And full disclosure, I read The Old Place in two sittings, and yet I found myself procrastinating because, number one, I didn't know what was going to happen, and my heart was thundering throughout many parts of the book. But I didn't want the book to end. I wanted to stay with these characters. I wanted to stay in the town. And I'm getting ahead of myself. Please tell listeners about The Old Place, your inspiration. I need to hear it all.
Okay. The Old Place was inspired by the town where I grew up. I'm from a small town in Texas called Dennis. It's just west of San Antonio. And the town of Billington in the novel is Dehennis. It is Dehennis physically, geographically, like all of those little landmarks are described as they are. And that is, if this novel is autobiographical, it's autobiographical in terms of place. But everything else is fictionalized, which is why I changed the name of the town. You know, like I needed to take one step back if I'm going to make all these people up. But we moved away when I was 13 and all the Fingers are from there. You know, like Fingers and Fingers and Fingers, they're all from there. My parents moved us to San Antonio, which is not too far, but it's a big city. You know, San Antonio's a big city. And I have always had a very interesting relationship with my past as a small town kid. And my family's past as a small town family. And for a very long time, I was ashamed of it. And I moved out of that town as a queer person, as a gay man. Like I moved away a little before my true adolescence. You know, I wasn't quite certain who I was, you know, in terms of like my identity. And I've always thought, well, how would my life have been different if I had stayed until I was 18? You know, how would my life have been different had I never left, or if I left and came back? And I was always working through these hypotheticals in my head, kind of sort of figure out how I feel about this town. And over time, I came to like realize I shouldn't be ashamed of this town. It's where I'm from. You know, I should respect this town. You know, I have some good memories there. I have a lot of weird memories there, awkward memories there. But for the most part, it's a fact of my life. And, you know, basically, I just grew up.
What's that expression? With age comes perspective. Not that you're so old, but, you know, when you have that time and space apart.
Yes. And so I finally figured out how I felt about this place, and it was not condescending at all. It was respectful. I have no interest in ever living there again, but I don't harbor any bad feelings mm-hmm. towards it. There's no resentment. And the novel was beyond just being like this piece of writing, this piece of fiction that I wanted to write and took so much pleasure in writing, was also a way of me like working out my feelings about this town through like fiction, which I think a lot of people do. You know, they work out their issues with fictional characters and situations.
And it is that yeah. it is, you're describing it, and it seems yeah. like you've, that feeling of being able to write from that perspective must have been so liberating, because you didn't yeah. harbor all of that.
Yeah. And I've had a couple interviews today, and I think I've told the story once or twice, but I think it's just, it's so important to me. When one of the first people who read this was my sister, and my sister moved away after she graduated from high school. She's older than I am. And well, she's great. Yeah. And I was very, my family's great, but I'm very intimidated by her. She's very smart. She's also just my older sibling. Your older siblings, you're intimidated sure. by them. Like, I respect them, but you know, you just want to be cool like them. You want to be like them. And when I sent her an early version of the manuscript, I was so nervous. I just wanted her to like it, like, please like it even more than my parents, like, please. And she liked it. She's kind of a woman of few words. And one of the only things she told me was, I'm so glad you weren't condescending towards this town. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that's all I wanted you to say. I want you to know that I really respect these people and this place. And I took so much pleasure in being with them while I wrote it.
And the same for me, to the point where I'm thinking, this is not a spoiler, but I'm not done with them. I hope you're not either, but we'll get to that maybe later on. I love that you're talking about Billington as a town, mm-hmm. because for me, having never been to, I've been to San Antonio.
Oh, great.
But having been to Texas the one time, everybody knows who listens to the podcast, I have interviewed or hosted so many Texas authors. Mm-hmm. And the books take place in Texas. I obviously have a thing for these small towns that are, yeah. that are in Texas. And by the way, as a born and bred Brooklynite, welcome to the welcome to the borough. But
thanks.
I'm appreciative that you made me want to visit Billington.
Yeah.
I don't know how you did that.
I'm glad I did. I also tried to approach it as realistically as possible. I don't want anyone to think when they read this novel that anyone can move to this place and feel comfortable and happy and loved and secure. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just so unreasonable. Right. And stupid. But this particular, these lives, I think are, I just wanted to present them as like totally full and rich. And I think so often, not all the time, mm-hmm. but so, like, there are plenty of novelists who write small towns beautifully and without a single gram of condescension. I hate when small town stories are told from the perspective of people who think that if you stay, you are somehow pathetic, or you lost,
right.
or you made a bad choice. And I wanted to be clear that these people are all very comfortable with their decisions, and they found a way to be happy in this life, even though it's not moving off to San Antonio or New York City or whatever it may be. Of course, some of them are not happy, but right. that was something I felt very acutely. I just couldn't be disrespectful to these people.
And you weren't. Alice Carey from Book Page, again, I'm using her review because it was so spot on, but she says the old place has a Lake Wobegon feel, a vibrant literary locale that readers will be loath to leave. I'm raising my hand. Listeners cannot see me, but that is exactly how I felt. I felt comfortable in the town. I felt comfortable with the people. And, you know, you've got all these people in this town, and mm-hmm. I don't know how you managed to present this ensemble cast so beautifully. That is your alchemy. That is your gift to all of us. And the focus, even though it's really Mary Alice and Ellie, I wanted to know, I was focusing on Catherine and Josie mm-hmm. and Gerald and Michael. I know them. They don't know mm-hmm. me, but I feel like I know them. Even Maria, I was like, what's yeah. her story? You know, like, and I'm not going to spoil too many things about the book. The backstories were so important. As you were writing, were there characters you edited down to keep the narrative flowing? It's a hard question to articulate because I don't know how you kept it so tight and page turning. And were there any characters that didn't make it in the book?
There were no character. There was a character that someone had suggested to me that I cut Josie entirely. And I understood they had reasons for it. I understood what they meant by it.
Right.
But I couldn't do it. And to answer your question, there are no characters who I cut down in any significant way. I cut certain scenes, everything involving Josie and her pool.
Right.
That was a much larger subplot that honestly was like, it got too much. It was irritating, honestly. Like it was a little much. But for the most part, I was just expanding everything. I just wanted more from all of them. I really don't think there was anyone that I cut down. Mm-hmm. If anything, I was worried. I wanted to make sure that these relationships were believable. Even though Mary Alice is this kind of thorny person who people don't really like, guess what? It's a small town. You have to interact with her all the time. So I had to make sure I added in these interactions and was able to showcase that she exists in this place and she's an active member of the community, but she doesn't really have any friends and people don't really like her all that much. And that required making everyone else as rich as I had time for, you know? Like, I'm glad you mentioned Maria. I love Maria. I love Maria.
And she has that scene with, I think it's Josie, mm-hmm. at the lunch,
yeah.
And she says, but we love her. She's ours. And mm-hmm. I mean, there were so many, we spoke off mic, there were so many scenes that just brought me to tears in this book. And that was one of them. And I thought, you know, you also give Mary Alice this kind of Olive Kittredge kind of thing. It's like a very prickly person, but you, gosh, I felt for her. I felt for her.
I'm glad. I do understand that she might be a little much for people. Like I can, if someone read the first three chapters of this and said, I don't care about this woman, she's mean, I would honestly, I totally understand it. She's tough. She's tough to like, but I that's why I really wanted to make sure those flashbacks were as, I don't know, descriptive and filled with as much rationale for her behavior as possible, because there you had to like her by the end, and it's a tough sell to like that woman by the end of the book.
Unbelievable.
So,
unbelievable.
Yeah.
You did it.
But I like her, so...
And so do I. And I mean, I hate to say I was casting the book as I was reading, but you know, I was kind of putting people in my head. You mentioned Josie, you know, mm-hmm. she's the city girl transplant. She marries Travis. I want to know their backstory, but he comes from like this, I hate to say it, but he comes from this like Dutton family, like Yellowstone. Like he's got that kind of family without all of the, you know, the sprawling aspect of the family, mm-hmm. shall we say.
Yeah.
But I wanted her backstory, and you leave us wanting more page after page. Mm-hmm. When you are writing this, where were you when you were writing it? Was it before COVID, after COVID, during COVID?
It was early COVID. It was like I started writing this April, May 2020. It existed as a screenplay before because I did have that background. I went to college. I don't do that professionally by any means. It was just something I liked doing. It was kind of like just a hobby because I've been a writer my whole career, but it's been like advertising, copywriting. Then I went into journalism. Then now I'm a podcaster. There's no writing there, but I still do freelance stuff. But I love writing fiction, but it was always this very specific type of fiction. And when I finally had, it wasn't necessarily the time, because I can make time if I need to make time. It was everything. It was April 2020, and I needed a distraction that wasn't familiar. I was working. Thank God I had a job that I could do during the pandemic, right. and that could keep me occupied those hours of the day.
Right.
But those other hours, I needed to not be with my thoughts. You know, like I needed to be out of my head. And so I went to Billington, you know, like to be sappy. I went there. And it was extremely helpful to me to write this novel. And I truly expected nothing to come of it. I just was happy to do it. And at that time, my agent was like, when you finish it, I'll send it out. But she's an incredible realist. She is not one to ever make you think that anything is amazing and that anyone is going to love it. So I love her so much. And it's just like, great. I'm not an optimistic person by nature. I don't have any expectations. So it was just because of that, it was just low stakes. Just get out of the world right now and write this book. And I wrote in the afternoons. I just found that I like writing in the afternoons more than in the mornings or in the evening, and in my little desk in my bedroom that I used to work at. So yeah, cramp, you know, Brooklyn.
Yeah.
I was in my bedroom.
Yeah, there's not much else.
Yeah.
So you sit down April somewhere around there. Mm-hmm. Who comes to you first? Like, was Mary Alice first? Was Ellie? Like, who comes first for you?
It was both. It was Mary Alice and Ellie. because I don't think one exists without the other. And Josie came a little later, but not long after. And obviously the boys were there from the beginning. A lot of name changing, you know. But really? She was always Mary Alice and she was always Ellie. Josie was always Josie. Mm-hmm. But everyone else kind of flipped around because a lot of it, you know, I'm from a small town. My family read this book and they're going to give it to people who still live in the small town. You know, like no one's based on anyone, but definitely names are there for people in the town to be like, oh, I wonder if he named him after her. Right. And the answer is yes, I did. Like that was just me trying to be like little Easter eggs for the hundreds of people in Deanna's who lived there. Yeah, it was definitely Mary Alice. It's a character I just really cared about. And that relationship is the center of the book and it's the center of everything. And obviously Michael and Kenny's relationship was much closer to home for me.
Right.
But because of what happens to them, mm-hmm. I'm trying not to be spoiler. It's so hard. Because of what happens to them, they're not the central focus. So thank God I just really loved Ellie and Mary Alice so much.
Unbelievable. There are so many scenes, like I said, that brought me to tears. And I think of the two boys also. It's just really something. When you're writing and you get to those moments, you write with such empathy. Do you know those scenes are going to hit that way? I mean, I can't imagine, like, does something happen? Do you get the chills or does something happen when you finish writing a scene and you're like, oh gosh, I'm pleased with that.
Oh yeah. Absolutely. And also I think because of that, I have to write pretty linearly. I like building to it.
I see.
I would love, and I know that scene's going to happen. I know that that scene in the old place is going to happen. I know that that scene at the picnic is going to happen. These like, and the scene at the wedding, I know that all these things are going to happen, but I wanted to build towards it and make sure that it was when I wrote it, I got that feeling too, where I was like, oh, this release, this catharsis, this like thing. And that I don't think I would have been able to do that had I just written them separately and then ultimately combined them.
Oh my gosh, Bobby, you're killing me. This book is so amazing. I mean, it really is just so amazing. I can't wait to be able to hand it to patrons in the library and recommend it for book discussions because there's so much joy and heartbreak. And it's really a perfect package of a book. And I know that you're coming up with a crazy book tour and it's very early on. And I hate to ask this question. You can mm-hmm. absolutely say no, no pressure, but you're going to get that question. Like what comes next for some of these characters? So my question is, and you can say no spoilers, I'm not answering mm-hmm. anything you can share about what you might be working on next.
What I am currently working on is not about Billington.
Okay.
But it could be, you know, like it could be. I think that's the best I can do.
Okay. I'm raising my hand. Listeners can't see me, but they can already anticipate how I'm not going to try to, I'm trying to try too hard not to harass my finger. But I'm all set for whatever you do next. I am there for it. I know your book tour it's really just going to be insane for you. Where can listeners find you on social media or where can they find you to see your upcoming events?
The upcoming events, the only ones I have scheduled are in Brooklyn on the day of release, the 20th of September, and then in San Antonio at Books or Magic bookstore. And then in San Antonio, 2 days later, September 22nd at Nowhere Bookshop. And then I think, I will be going to the Austin Book Festival, Texas Book Festival, and then the Miami one. And I don't remember the dates. I think they're both in November. But if you're going to be at both of those, I should be there too.
Okay.
So well, along with a million other people.
Look at you. Unbelievable. So once this book hits, people will lose their minds. So I don't know where to tell people to find you.
I just set up, just to make it easy, I bought theold.place and then there's a pre-order button that goes right there. Theold.place.
I will point listeners to that location on the podcast page for this episode. Any book recommendations before you go that I can share with everybody?
Oh, yes. I just read, I took a little vacation. So I read so many books on vacation, which is exactly what I wanted to do. I guess if I had to pick one of them, I would pick Parish by LaToya Watkins, another Texas novel. It's a harrowing family story, and it's just so wise and beautiful and very sad, but just like one of the most rewarding kind of family dramas that I've read in a really long time.
Her prose
I love that.
Her prose is a knockout. It's a knockout.
It's really just gorgeous. And I read another kind of story about community. I read The Rabbit Hutch by Tess Gunty. Very interesting. It's going through the different perspectives of people in this apartment complex and this fake Midwestern town. I love a fake town and outside of Chicago. And it's just really very intriguing. That sounds like I'm like minimizing it, but it's just a very intriguing and weird and very beautiful book. This is someone who is just another eloquent, beautiful, gorgeous prose here. And great vacation reads where you're just like so satisfied. You can read them in one sitting. I was just like, I love these books so much. Yeah.
That's kind of how I felt about The Old Place by Bobby Finger, just in case you're wondering. And I've heard someone told me to listen to The Rabbit Hutch, to listen to the audiobook, that it was incredible. Oh. So I have that copy and I will be doing that.
I can see that because because of all the shifting perspectives and they're all so unique. They're just all, I mean, the way that she embodies all these people is just like so impressive.
Oh my gosh. Well, I will put all the links to Bobby's recommendations where you can find The Old Place and purchase your copy on the podcast page for this episode. Today's book, The Incredible The Old Place by today's guest, Bobby Finger, hit shelves on September 20th. So please grab a copy at your local library or your local independent bookstore. The Old Place is published by G.P. Putnam Sons, an imprint of Penguin Random House. Bobby Finger, I once again thank you so much for joining me and the listeners today on Merrick Library's Top Shelf Podcast. And I really hope you will come back to join me for whatever comes next.
I would be happy to. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh my gosh, this is amazing. Listeners, I thank all of you for joining me today. Remember to follow Top Shelf at Merrick Library on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and wherever you find most podcasts. For the latest and the greatest at Merrick Library, check out our website, merricklibrary.org. Special thanks to Merrick Library Director Dan Chusmier, Assistant Director Diane Bondi, and the Merrick Library Board of Directors for getting us off the ground and on to the airwaves. Until the next time, remember to keep us on your top shelf.